Seems a lot further up here than it used to be. This is what you get. We were in elders meeting a few weeks ago, and Curtis said he was going to be out of town for this retreat, and Scotty was going to be out of town, and he wondered who would preach. And I just sat there quietly, and I got the feeling I was being stared at. I'm not going to preach, but I am going to talk to you a little bit. I couldn't help but reminisce this morning when our brother was talking about the early church. I grew up in a country congregation. It was quite a nice town for its day, and the church was a stone building, even had balconies from the days when slaves would sit in the balconies and the white people would sit down below. But the thing that I remembered most when he was saying this, and this, the Lord will forgive me for this, I believe, after services, we always went and drank the communion wine. We were just little bitty children, so I got an early taste of wine because they didn't have grape juice in those days. So if anybody asks you if the preacher was a drinker, you say, well, he started from childhood. That's terrible to think of when you're trying to take the communion. But it was all that I could think of at the moment, and I asked the Lord to bring me back to the cross for a little while. I see Scotty Spake sitting down here. They lied to me, Scotty. You're not back yet. Okay. The other thing I noticed, this beautiful plant has been here for several weeks now, and it hasn't been too long ago that I was looking at that thinking, you know, Becky Stanley and I went through a whole series of times hoping that it would bloom sometime when I was preaching. Becky, it's blooming. Fortunately, it lasted longer than the preaching will, so we're in good shape about that. I was listening to Curtis just a few weeks ago, and a thought came to me, and I did something I almost never do. I was not planning to preach any time in the future. Now, we've worked out a system where Scotty is generally the one who's going to take the time when Curtis is away from us. But I wrote down in my iPhone, which I only do to remember things, that's what I use it for, seldom use it to talk to people, but I wrote down one thought that came to me, and it was the moment. He had said something that made me think about, isn't there always a moment? Somewhere in our lives there is that moment. It is a moment that characterizes us, that changes us, that represents us. And I was thinking, I'll use that someday for a thought. And then when the time came, I got to thinking, what in the world were you thinking about when you wrote that down? But I'll tell you what I was thinking about. When you go back and you look at the Bible characters, there generally is something in them that you characterize them by. It may be David when he goes out with a sling and takes down the giant. You know a lot about David. You hear a lot of stories, but that's the one the children remember. Abraham. When I think of Abraham, I think about the fact that he had become a mighty power, and when five kings overcame the kings of the plain, Abraham takes his own army and goes out and defeats five kings. Or perhaps I think about the fact that here he is in some great way becoming a mighty power because God has told him that he will be a great nation and that through him all the nations of the world will be blessed. That's the beginning of Messiah. That's the first time we really begin to get some idea that there is a promise coming of someone who's going to make the whole world blessed. If you're wanting to look for a moment that characterizes Abraham, you might look at the time when he raises the knife to slay his son. And that's really some special moment, isn't it? Unfortunately, God stops him. But later on in the scriptures, it speaks of him having killed his son simply because he was doing what God told him to do. But you know, when you think of that, all of those things are important, and they're all stories that we really like to hear and know about, and characterize Abraham, but that was not his defining moment. Let me read you a passage. This is from Genesis 12. Now the Lord said to Abram, go forth from your country and from your relatives and from your father's house to a land which I will show you. And I will make of you a great nation, and I will bless you, and I will make your name great. And I will be with those who bless you, and the ones who curse you I will curse, and all the families of the earth will be blessed. So Abraham went forth as the Lord had spoken to him. Lot went with him. Now Abraham was 75 years at the time. So what is that for a moment? The moment is very clear. So Abraham went forth. That's what it was all about. Here's this man in a strange land. We have no idea what his background is, but God chose him. God says, I'm sending you to another place. I want you to leave your family. I want you to leave the land of your birth. I want you to go out to a place that you don't know. You're going to dwell there, and eventually I'll give it to you. But the turning point was, and he went out. All the rest of it wouldn't have had any meaning outside of that. He made a choice. He had a moment in his time where he made one choice, and that one choice brought all these other events into focus, and that would be the turning moment for him. How about Noah? If I were to ask you for a moment in Noah's time, what would it be, the story that you would tell about Noah? To me, it's fascinating that he has this ark full of animals. I have never been able to imagine it. We've been looking for the ark as long as people have been thinking about those stories. There's always one being found somewhere around the old Mount Ararat, but we never quite get to it. We never quite find it. But it is fascinating to think of someone who would take all the seed stock for what's going to be in the world after that and two by two place them on this large boat and then go in with them and be sealed up by God. I like zoos, but zoos smell. I can't imagine what the ark was like. Is that the story of Noah? Well, it's one of the stories. Or perhaps the gentler people among us may think about Noah was the first man to plant something when the new world began. He goes out and he plants a vineyard. Now, we'll overlook the part about him getting drunk from drinking the wine. But the fact is, the story's there. The very first to plant a plant in the new world. Have you ever been in a storm? I've been in a lot of storms in my life. I grew up in Arkansas, and storms are just a part of life there. I've even been in storms in East Texas. The first time I ever took the new boat that I bought out to Lake Sam Rayburn, I went to this really nice little cove where one of the McElroys had showed me how to fish there. And I was fishing, and I kept seeing this big cloud, but I didn't pay any attention to it because it wasn't really that bad. I could just see it kind of moving in. And it was so quiet there in the cove. And then I got through fishing, and I decided, now I've got to go back to where I put the boat in. And the waves were 4 foot high. I broke the windshield off the boat. I broke seats loose in the boat. I was not terrified. I was just minimally scared. Because I always figured I could, you know, put on a life jacket and survive. But that was a big storm. But that's nothing like what Noah was in. You're locked up inside. I don't do that well anyhow. I had to have a porthole if I'm going to be in the ark. I've got to see outside. But he's locked up inside. He's got all of these animals. And there is a terrible storm that goes on and on and on. I don't know if anybody got seasick. That's not even part of the story. But those are the stories we think of when we think of Noah. But that's not the moment that was the turning point in his life. Listen again from Genesis chapter 6. God said to Noah, "The end of all flesh has come before me, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. And behold, I'm about to destroy them with the earth. Make for yourself an ark of gopher wood. You shall make the ark with rooms, and you shall cover it inside and out with pitch." That's not the story we spend much time on. But the answer to that is, Noah started making an ark. That was the moment that characterizes Noah. He's spoken of as a righteous man, but the moment that characterizes him is not the fact that he was in the ark with animals, or that he planted the new vineyard, or that he was the beginning of the whole new world, but it's the day that God gives him a task to do and he just does it. Can you imagine doing that? If you're living up in the mountain country and you know that there's wickedness everywhere and you're bothered by that, but then God says to you, "What I want you to do is build a big boat." You think, "Why would I do that?" But the reason why was God told him to, and Noah just did it. He not only just did it, he did it for 100 years with all the people jeering. If you start to do something, you know, today we have people every once in a while that predict the end of the world, and folks get on the roof and wrap themselves in sheets, and we all laugh and think, "Isn't that silly?" And they're only up there for a week or two at the most, and then it's all over with. For 100 years, Noah and his sons are crafting this large ship on dry land, with their neighbors and friends who are already hostile and wicked people coming by and making fun of them. We do pretty good with a lot of things, but we don't do well with being made fun of. But he just kept building the boat. When God called him, he came. And that was a defining moment. I was trying to think of the defining moment for Jesus. I'm not sure that I got it right. And he didn't suddenly have a change of heart and everything was different and he became a Christian or whatever, you know. He was God's son from the beginning, and in his earliest years he said, "I have to be about my Father's business." And as I was thinking of that, I don't know what you come up with. Think for a moment. What do you think was the defining moment? Was it the nails on the cross, or "Father, forgive them, they know not what they do"? That's all very important. It seems to me that the defining moment in the life of Jesus was when he fell on his face, sweating, as it were, great drops of blood, and said, "Is it possible that we don't have to do this?" That's the test. All the other things are power and might and glory and joy and then pain and sorrow. But here's the point where he says, "Is there another way?" And then the words that we're all so familiar with, "Nevertheless, not my will but thine be done." I think somewhere along the way, that may be the defining moment for us. That somewhere in our life, at some period of time, one day out of all the things that happen, finally we make a decision in our life, "Nevertheless, not my will, but thine be done." Oh, we'll have ups and downs. We'll go through hard times and good times. There'll be times when we're not sure we're on the right track and times when we're so sure that we're wrong. But somewhere along the way, we had to make that decision that is the one that calls us back when we drift, when we have hard times, brings us down when the times are so good. But it's the decision. "Nevertheless, not my will but thine be done." And that's what I call you to this morning. You may have made that decision a dozen times, but that's not what the decision is. It's the one where, in spite of all the problems you may face and all the troubles you'll go through and all the joys you'll have, that you look back and say, there was a time when I chose, not my will, but thine be done. If you haven't done that, this is the time to do it. Let us know your needs while we stand and sing.